Truth and Transcendence. Brought to you by Yes, You Now, with Catherine Llewellyn.
Truth and Transcendence, episode 52, part two, take four. Steve Hinke and Catherine Llewellyn. So when you started to interview people, what was that like for you?
It was extraordinary. It was like living outside my own skin. It was just, I felt it was completely, it blew my mind. It really did.
In a front row seat on somebody else's life.
Yeah, but also a front row seat on my own massive risk-taking, it felt like. I mean, it's not really a massive risk, right? What's the worst that can happen? But it felt like an enormous thing. And in fact, I wasn't expecting to start doing guests at the time when I actually did start. But I just kind of woke up on a Monday morning and it was, right, the next thing I want to talk about is gender. It's really important. I want to talk about gender. And then it was the next morning I woke up and I want to do it with a guest. And the next morning I woke up and, right, it's got to be Tom, my friend Tom, who does a lot of work on diversity and inclusion. And I literally rang him up and said, Tom, this is what's happened in my awareness this week. Will you do it? And he said, yes, I can record tomorrow. And we were off. And he was great. You know, he was already experienced at doing video interviews and things like that, and he actually helped me to sort out something to do with my sound on the first one when we were recording.
And did he help you sort something out in relation to gender?
Oh yeah, he was fantastic. Was just fantastic.
I'd like to hear that podcast. The world is going through a major gender upheaval.
I know, it's just,
and it doesn't know why it's happening. And it's really obvious to those who do know why it's happening.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot to say about that subject myself. And some of the things I have to say will piss a few people off. So we'll save that for another time, should we ever do this again. But I will say to you that, you know, it's a risk always to interview somebody. At the same time, you know, you wouldn't have anybody listening to this right now if they weren't at least somewhat curious. You know, they're not just killing time. They're actually curious as to what it is you, Catherine, have dug up, because you come up with really good stuff.
Well, thank you. For a long time, I think I've had this kind of facility for tuning into what's the thing that's going on that matters.
All right. So I've got a question for you that will take you a different direction, maybe. Mm. Tell me and tell us a little bit about your one-on-one work or one-on-team work that you do with executives and different people in your work.
Okay. So typically, if I'm working one-to-one with somebody, it's usually because that person they've reached a very good place already. Things are going well with their business. They're pretty happy with who they are. So they don't have kind of dramas going on in their life. They're not in crisis, but they're in a place where it's pretty good and they've got an opportunity to go to the next level in some way. So whether that's they're in a new relationship and they're kind of inheriting stepsons and daughters and they're moving to a new place and it's a whole project and they want to really make it work fantastically for everybody involved, but at the same time, keep their business going and keep that going from strength to strength, for example. Or it could be another example where it's not to do with that side of it so much. It's more to do with, we've got a chance to merge with this other organization. We know that if we do that well, everybody's going to feel involved. Everyone's going to feel they can be creative. And we're going to make a lot of money, we're going to be happy, and we're going to be serving the community, and it'd be fantastic. And we think we're going to do that, but we want to make sure we do that. And I, the leader who becomes my client, recognize that I am the primary leverage point for that to take place. I'm my own primary asset. So these are people who see themselves as their own primary asset more important than their money, buildings, businesses, everything else that are assets as well. And they recognize that if they leverage themselves as an asset, everything else in a ripple effect transforms. So that's
so if you help people discover that they are the primary asset in their own life, and then when they're at a stage in their life as the primary asset, to shift into the next gear, that you can be there to help them. Because, you know, most people walking around, as much as we seem to all think that we're alive and well and living in, for a great percentage of people, their life hasn't even started yet. And they don't know how to start it. And so they have Ferrari, Lamborghini, Aston Martin, Rolls Royce, Volkswagen, and it's still in, you know, neutral. It's not even in first gear. And then somehow life comes along and they bounce, bounce, bounce their way into first gear. And a lot of people spend their time between first gear, neutral, and reverse, back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth. It's a real art form to get yourself, get your business, get your life into second gear, and even into third and fourth, and if it's now up to 10 speeds, the car. So the vehicle. So when you look at yourself in relation to these people, it sounds to me like you really have an easy time helping somebody go from second to third, and third to fourth, fourth to fifth, fifth to sixth. Yeah. And that the person has to, you know, earn their chops by struggling and struggle harder. You know, as Churchill said, when you're going through hell, keep moving. You earn your chops on a sailboat by taking a class and being given like a 6 or an 8 foot little sailboat on a calm day that falls over 15 times and you have to work for 20 minutes to get it upright and then start sailing and fall over again until you can command that little boat around that area so that you can get a bigger boat and a bigger boat and a bigger boat. If you want to sail one day, you can have a 35, 45, 55, 65 footer that you can sail long distances. Same thing with your personal life, with your business life, with your relationship life, with your education life. You have to struggle harder. When you find yourself struggling, you have to struggle harder. And that's the reverse, neutral, first, second. It's not easy to find a mentor to help you at that stage of the game, partly because you can't listen. You can't hear what they're saying. You haven't got your own vision established, and that vision has to come from you.
Yes. And I think, actually, this is very interesting you say that, because I think for a lot of coaches, they find themselves expected to come up with the vision for the client. And one of the things I'm very good at is helping the client come up with their own vision, which is not my vision. The vision I have is the vision of the person transformed, of their life transformed, the essence of that, the experience of that, you know, that experience. In your interview, you used a term called the new guy, you know, where you did some healing work with somebody, you turn around, you looked back at the new guy who was the person was now a new person. So when I'm talking to someone who says they would like to work with me, I have a feeling in me of how they are now. But it's almost like I've got a feeling in me that will recognize when they are the new guy, that the new guy that they want to be. Although I don't know, I can't define what that is. They're the person who can define that. But I can recognize when it's happened, and I can recognize when it's on the path. So I'm more of a sort of intuitive, improvisational support and assistance to them. I don't tell them the vision. They tell me the vision. I help them, because I'm also very good at helping somebody recognize that moment when they found the vision. Because when they found the vision, everything changes for them in their body and in their spirit and in their heart and how they feel.
Radical.
Yeah, they radically feel different.
Like a musician discovering their music, or a painter discovering their genre.
Yeah.
You can see the pre, and then the and now the thing.
Yes.
And the thing might change to a different thing, to a different thing, to a different thing, to a different thing, you know, from cubism to sculpture to, you know, realism. However, yeah. each one of those things is a real thing that was given birth to by all the pre-pre. An old Bowinkle cartoon that says the amplifier amplifies the sound, the pre-amplifier amplifies the pre.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like some people say, well, let me help you find your soul's purpose. I've read some of those books. I've looked at some of those things. And, you know, if it's ever worked for somebody, bully for them. However, oftentimes you have to go through the school of hard knocks and or sit and look at something long enough to say, well, that there's something missing that would make that work better, that would make that yeah. easier.
Yeah.
And now you're an inventor or whatever it is that you're, you know, inspired to do. Yeah. I'm always amazed by people who do things that they're quote unquote not born into, that they're not a natural at.
Yeah.
That somebody has just evolved into that at some stage in their life. You know, I became a painter at 53, 54 years old. I was a poet as a teenager. I thought I might actually spend my life as a poet. And one day at like 18 years old, I went, that's it. That's done. And I was a good poet. And it was done. It's like, and when it's right, you don't miss it half a second. It's like if you're in a relationship, when it comes to a point that it's over, it's over. And if you have the courage to end it, if it's right, you don't really miss it half a second.
Yeah.
So how do you help people then when they come to you and they, you know, are in second gear or in first or in third? They are moving. They've discovered, you know, that they need your help. So what, you know, what's it like? Do you work with people by the year, by the month? By 10 visits, how do you help people get going and acclimate to having a mentor like yourself?
So we have a chat on Zoom, usually, to begin with, and just get a sense of where they are and where they want to go and what their situation is, and also a bit of a sense on how they like to evolve, how they like to learn. So what's their kind of, how do they do that? How do they like to do that? What suits them? And I then have a think about it in terms of what do I think would be a really good way to at least start working together. Because I really believe in this thing of starting to work with somebody and seeing how that goes. And then,
well, and let me interrupt. You're not a small time player. I mean, you have people that are in parliament, right? You have people that are executives at the highest level of what's going on out there. And you also have housewives, and you have, you know, teenagers that are getting their shit together as students and things like that, that are really, you know, wanting to express the fullness of their possibilities. You're not just talking about, you know, all the ordinary folk like me. You have people at all different levels that have decided they're ready to become extraordinary.
Yeah, they want to go to the next level. They want to do that, and they want to do that, and they intend to do it. I had a great conversation with somebody. This was someone who had worked with me before, years before, and this person. A lot of people out there who've got a link, and that link allows them to get themselves in my diary without telling me. So they'll just show up in my diary, and I'll look at the diary and, oh, I've got a Zoom meeting with John on Tuesday at 2 o'clock. I wonder what that's about, right? And there's a whole bunch of people who've got permission to do that. And this person showed up and I said, right, what's going on? And they said, well, I've got this new CEO role. I really want to step up to it and do it really incredibly well. Obviously, they rate me or they wouldn't have given it to me. And I want to do this and this and this. And I said, fantastic. What's your plan to do that? And they said, well, my plan is to ask you to help me to do it. And I said, great plan. Can't argue with that. So then we worked out how we were going to do it. And we worked together quite intensively, actually, for about 3 months, every 2 weeks, for an hour and a half, for 3 months. And then we had a review session just the other day, actually, 3 months later. They've accomplished everything they wanted to accomplish. But
isn't that fantastic?
You know, the power for it came from them. And that then gave me permission to, you know, take my leash off, that, you know, and just run and help them run like a pair of greyhounds over the hills.
I've often threatened to take that level of success, whether it's in healthcare, personal, spiritual, monetary transformation or whatever, and say to when the person says to me, okay, so what do I owe you for that? I've threatened forever to say, well, what's it worth to you? Yeah. Just pay me what it's worth to you. Because one of my patients once came in on a visit, and I met them on this visit, and they were about a $2 million a year software designer. And after we cracked everything in his way, he became a $25 million software designer. And I got paid, you know, over the course of many, many sessions, probably $1,500 total. And yeah, it was worth a lot more than that to him than
yes,
that. You know?
Yes, yeah.
And it's like some of us are in these incredible roles where we are the crowbar that pops the thing into the right, you know, gearing, and off it runs, and it designs something that transforms like automation. And it's like, I may end this life as poor as Tesla, but at the same time made a decent contribution. It's a funny, funny thing. So if somebody says, okay, well, 3 months with Catherine, is that, you know, how does somebody pay you? How does somebody figure it out? Where do you put all that together for us? You don't have to talk your rates if you don't want to, but I mean, where does your style of communication come through where the person can give that value a value and give it back to you?
Okay, so first off, we've worked out between us the reason for doing the work, and the reason for doing the work is worth a lot to them. So it's really worth a lot. So I'm then coming back and saying, great, I'll help you to do that. And you've got to invest this amount of time, and you've got to do work in between the sessions, and this, that, and the other. And this is the fee. And I work out the fee based on what I think it's worth and what I think they can afford and what I'm prepared to do it for. Mm-hmm. But not so much that I feel like I'm charging too much, and not so little that I feel like I'm sacrificing myself. So I do a little bit of, you know, work.
That's an art form, I got to tell you. I have not arrived yet. And I just basically throw out a number and stay with that for about 5 years, and then, you know, raise it or lower it with the times. When I first came to England about 18 years ago now, the pound was like $2.20 a pound. And I was 85 quid a night for Healing Theater. And we had 85 people and 100 people every night backed in there. And 85 quid a night, that was like paying $200 a night. And they couldn't give me the money fast enough. And then they said, well, I'd like a private session. I'd say, okay, 500 quid for 90 minutes. And they couldn't pay me fast enough. And it was like $1,200 worth of money for the time. And, you know, and then Obama got elected and the pound crashed to $1.30, and I was holding too many pounds for a guy going to America, England, America, Hong Kong, India, America, England, Hong Kong. And it was like, oh my gosh, it transformed everything, and money just radically changed.
Yes.
And the pound became way more dear, and everything shifted so much. And to watch how the world is going through all this. And then I'm thinking, like you, because we mentioned in the previous part of the podcast that you were at home and you were isolated, and you were thinking, wow, this is going to crush everybody's economy. And then you find out that art really took off. Real estate really took off. Banking really took off. Minerals really took off. All these things that, or maybe you just started paying attention to how they were already taking off. But the point is that the world didn't die. The world didn't go to hell. The world became a rather expensive and unfolding thing. And as a result of that, I think a lot of people have been surprised by the growth over the last 2 years while we were in hiding, especially online purchasing, especially having things shipped and delivered to your door. And then come to find out, while you're having a box delivered to your door and you're watching your neighbor receive something from that delivery service, you say, wow, you know, isn't it amazing? And they say, well, I've been having stuff delivered to my door for 20 years. You're like, what? It's like, yeah, I've been having stuff sent to me. I get my groceries sent to me for the last 15 years. You're like, you do? You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know it, a lot of organic farmers and a lot of people who grow ethical animals and slaughter ethically and use no chemicals and in their fruits and vegetables as well, a lot of those companies ship food directly to the home or directly to the restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, to go down and get the organic food at the grocery store is sometimes the lowest quality, the best quality can show right up at your door. And it's been going on for decades.
I know. Yeah.
It's mind blowing.
It is. It's fantastic.
Absolutely mind blowing.
It's fantastic. I'm very lucky here, actually. I'm in this tiny little hamlet in Wales in the UK. And in this hamlet, there's about 20 houses and the most amazing inn, which is like a pub. With it, which does incredible food. Anyway, the local organic veg place delivers to this pub once a week. And they also now deliver to me once a week on the way to the pub. This incredible organic veg and amazing free range eggs, you know, and fresh caught smoked salmon, you know, sustainably caught if I want it. Incredible. I come down in the morning on a Friday, 7:30 in the morning, come down, go outside. There's this box of incredible vegetables and salad and bring it in. I'm very, very fortunate.
That's amazing. There is a guy, a friend of mine, a chiropractor in Florida that couldn't get what he wanted in like Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Just, you know, couldn't get what he wanted. And so he started having fruits and vegetables and ethical meat shipped to his garage. And then his neighbors said, what are you doing? And his patient said, what are you doing? And he said he made more money having boxes of food shipped to his garage and distributing it to his neighbors and his patients than he did as a chiropractor. He made like $150,000 a year on fruits and vegetables. And then I said, well, Sandy Gooch was an acquaintance of mine. I was in a breakfast club here in Beverly Hills in the day. And Sandy lived in West Los Angeles, and she did the same thing. And so at one point she had so many neighbors getting fruits, fresh organic stuff from her, that she went down to the corner and found a defunct gas station and converted it into where you could come and get your groceries. And it became Mrs. Gooch's. And then she had seven of them all over LA. And then Whole Foods decided they were going to become Whole Foods. And they went to Sandy Gooch and gave her $25 million for the seven stores. And that is how Whole Foods became Whole Foods.
Incredible.
And then Wild Oats said, well, if they can do it, we can do it. And then eventually Whole Foods bought all the Wild Oats. And it's like all that stuff just began because somebody wanted some fresh stuff to their house.
Yeah.
And so this podcast began because somebody wanted to give fresh stuff to their neighbors. And to their acquaintances, and to their patients, and to their clients, and to their country, and to their world.
Yes.
And so I will also say that those who listen to your podcasts, and there are many, that, you know, I don't know if you already do this, but I would say suggest to Catherine what you want to hear about.
Absolutely. I've actually
and
got
guests
a,
for her show.
Totally. I've actually got a page, which I do, which is in my show notes very often, which says, ask me anything, go to this page, yesyounow.today/podcast. You can send in feedback, suggestions, requests, you know, anything.
So
you
I'm
want.
Going to go so far as to say, to put your phone in the room and do a live show sometime and have it be a call-in show where they get to ask you, ask me anything. And have about three friends that are watching live that I have a phone in case
they promised to phone me.
Who promised to phone you if you go? You know, the hotlines are open, and then if you for some reason run out of things to say because you're kind of waiting and hoping for the phone to ring, that they call you up and go, hey, how do I cook hot dogs? You know, and so you can get the show on the road.
Fantastic.
Shows are interesting.
That's a great idea. Fantastic idea,
yeah.
Steve.
Yeah. No, really. And, you know, I can think of 20 people I know in the UK that you would love to interview, or you maybe already have. But you've got an endless resource because the world is getting so diverse, so interesting, and so fun.
That was another thing that struck me, that, you know, there's a podcast now on everything and people don't have to listen to them. I was listening to Dave Smith, the American comedian and sort of political commentator. He was talking the other day about he does a number of podcasts, and one of them is called Legion of Skanks. And on Legion of Skanks, it's a bunch of guys and they get together and they're swearing and they're being vulgar. And I can't listen to it. It's too much for me, right? It's really strong. But apparently people were complaining about Legion of Skanks and you're inflicting this on the population and you shouldn't be allowed to do this. And Dave Smith's on his other podcast, Part of the Problem, saying, you don't have to listen to it. In order to listen to it.
So compelling,
you know,
though.
You have to open a podcast app. And you have to search for Legion of Skanks.
But my teenagers are listening to it. I have to stay up and present. I have to find out what kind of trash you're telling them.
Exactly. But that's one of the things I love about podcasts. You know, people can listen to it whenever they want. And you can air whatever you want. I can talk about whatever I want. My guests can talk about whatever they want. And if someone wants to listen to it, they can. And if they want to listen to some more, they can. And if they don't want to, they don't have to. And that's a fantastically freeing
So if you've done mono, you and the camera, nobody there with you. So you basically, in a way, interviewed yourself.
Yes.
And free-formed your own stuff. And then you interviewed other people. If there were a question or a subject that you've shied away from or that you've flashed through like, ooh, someday, maybe I'll talk about that. If there's something that is, you know, vulnerable yet potent and meaningful, what is it that hasn't made it into the podcast yet?
Wow. Well, I haven't talked about my personal relationships, you know, because I haven't gone in that direction.
Uh-huh.
I haven't talked about partying in the 70s.
Were you at Studio 54 and all that?
No. I was in Oxford in England.
Great time.
Swimming naked in the Cherwell, which is the river that goes through Oxford.
I see.
You know, and
the question is did you jump into the church and swim naked in the holy water?
No.
Damn, you missed an opportunity.
No, I didn't.
Anyway.
So there's a number of, there are a number of areas of my own personal life that I haven't talked about.
Well, I'm going to say that my friend Peter in London and I have swum naked in that river in Oxford.
In the Cherwell? No.
We might have had our shorts on too, because Peter and I used to just meet on, you know, the odd Sunday or Saturday, jump on a train. Well, actually, we do the weekdays because it wasn't crowded. And we would jump on a train and go 2 hours out of London, one direction or another, and get out and take those 25-mile walks through the countryside where you have to step over the fences and go through the woods. And all of a sudden, there's this major art gallery in the middle of nowhere, or this cute little village with three little restaurants and the river or a stream. And so if it wasn't too crowded or wasn't crowded at all, we would jump in skinny. And if it was a little crowded, we wore our shorts. And we did it in the Thames, and we did it in Oxford, and we did it in a bunch of other places. And so
amazing.
I don't remember if we were in the skinny in Oxford or we had our shorts on that day.
The Cherwell River, most people have never heard of the Cherwell River, by the way, but because it's tiny. But it has these green weeds growing in the water. So. We're almost coming up to wanting to wind up for this particular section,
okay, great.
Aren't we?
Do we have about 3 minutes or what?
We've got about 9 minutes.
Okay, great.
But if you go in there naked, right, and if your friends are in a punt, and you're holding onto the back of the punt, and the punt is moving forwards, and you're naked, and your body is being pulled through this sort of silky green weeds that are sort of stroking down your body as you're pulled.
Sounds orgasmic. Water.
It's incredible. And if you're also on acid at the same time, you then got a really memorable experience.
Well, now there's so many people microdosing and macrodosing all that crap that they're probably making plans right now to head over to the Cherwell and have this experience.
I think now perhaps, you know, it may be frowned on, you know, because in those days, the establishment didn't really know what to do with people who were doing that sort of behavior.
But yeah, now, what the hell has happened to England? England used to be relatively free and you could say and do anything. And now it's a bit prudish. What's going on?
Honestly, I wish I knew. I just really...
Okay, well, let's take a moment and say that we're going to have a short break and come back for part three of Truth and Transcendence, episode 52. the interview of Catherine. So we'll take a short break and we'll come back on.
Beautiful.
You've been listening to Truth and Transcendence, the regular weekly podcast from Yes, You Now with Catherine Llewellyn. For more information, head to yesyounow.today/podcast.